A Winter Killing by E.A. Amar. Narrated by Sarah Jones. Day 1. The easiest way to do the job would be to disguise himself as Santa Claus, shoot James Allen with a handgun hidden in a gift, and leave the Christmas exposition with James's dead body in a huge sack slung over Santa's shoulder. But something about that plan seemed wrong to Lucky Wilson. Not the killing. Lucky was perfectly willing to do what he'd been told, just not like that. He wasn't into Christmas, but Lucky's 7-year-old daughter Mary Beth was, and it seemed cruel to murder someone while dressed as one of her favorite characters. But that was his problem to solve. Lucky's only guidance for the assassination had come via a cryptic text and photo of some man left on a burner phone, buried in a plastic bag behind his house a few days earlier. The text read, "Hey, Diana, are you coming with us to Christmas Wonderland this year? The flyer says they have caroling songbooks, homemade sweets, handcrafted ornaments, pictures with Santa, and $10 off Christmas Villages by James Allen. You want to add to your collection, right? Let me know." Lucky knew what they wanted. $10,000 for the death of James Allen, a man who would be at the D.C. Christmas Wonderland Exposition this weekend. Done however Lucky deemed necessary. He wrote back, "I'll be there." Lucky had never heard of the Christmas Wonderland Exposition, or even been to a holiday bazaar, and wasn't sure what to expect when he drove from his home in Northern Virginia on a Friday afternoon to the Washington, D.C. Convention Center. He thought he might see a few older patrons wandering around, buying handcrafted decorations for the grandchildren. Instead, traffic thickened and parking lessened as he neared the event, and he saw dense crowds carrying festive shopping bags, cosplaying Santas and elves, someone in an elaborate Christmas tree costume staggering toward the building. Lucky parked a few blocks away, made sure the knife in his ankle sheath was secure, left his .22 in the glove compartment. He'd hoped to force James Allen out to his car at gunpoint and drive him someplace remote, but that wouldn't be possible with these crowds. Too easy for James to signal that he was being kidnapped, regardless of how well Lucky hid his weapon. Best to murder him in the building. Lucky paid cash for a pass and headed inside. He kept his conversation with the ticket seller short and made a point of glancing away from the cameras, but he wasn't worried about being remembered. He knew he was forgettable. Brown hair in a mild 1950s part, soft blue eyes, an unremarkable body on the verge of paunchy. The kind of father in a family photo your eyes went to last, then passed over. His wife, Renee, on the eve of her 39th birthday, had cried and claimed she was aging into someone invisible. Lucky had held her, patted the back of her shoulder, even as he considered the curious adjective. He liked it. He craved invisibility. Lucky sifted through crowds on the convention floor, idly glancing at Christmas tree displays, different styles of garlands, outdoor decorations, German ornaments, gingerbread buildings, hundreds of other holiday decorations as he looked for James Allen. It took about 20 minutes for Lucky to find him, short and thin with a shaved head and hopeful blue eyes, selling painstakingly detailed Christmas villages from a stall. Lucky's other phone vibrated in his pocket. He pulled it out, saw that the call was from Renee, the image of his wife from 4 years ago on a beach. Renee crouched and smiling behind a 3-year-old Mary Beth, their daughter, in delighted mid-squeal. Lucky always felt a sharp movement of dread when his wife called during the day. It was never just a talk, and he couldn't help but worry. Something bad had happened to Mary Beth. Renee had received negative news from a doctor. A fire had furiously rushed to their home. Or Renee had discovered his secret. "Do you know what your daughter did in school today?" Renee asked and didn't wait for Lucky's answer. "She lied to Miss Sanders." Quick relief. "About what?" "She said she's getting a dog for Christmas." "Lucky, Mary Beth's not getting a dog. We told her that." Lucky eyed James Allen as James showed a customer the hidden battery compartment in a log cabin. He imagined slipping behind James, one hand over his mouth, the other slamming a knife into the side of James's neck, hiding his body under the table, walking away as blood spread like shadows. "That doesn't seem so bad," Lucky said. "I didn't think so either, but it was how Miss Sanders said she did it."
"Oh, yeah?"
Lucky watched James flick a switch underneath the log cabin. Smoke rose from the chimney. Lucky's gaze wandered to the other end of the table, to rolls of holiday-themed wrapping paper. "Miss Sanders told me," Renee was saying, "that after Mary Beth said she was getting a dog, all her classmates said they were also getting pets for Christmas. And then Miss Sanders asked them if they really were, and they said they hoped they were, except for Mary Beth. So Miss Sanders asked her again, and Mary Beth said, 'I swear to God I am.'"
"To God, Lucky. What the hell?"
Lucky briefly wondered if he could roll James's body in wrapping paper to conceal the blood, but he knew from experience that wouldn't work. Blood crosses every line. "Lucky?"
"I'm sorry, it's the house," he told his wife. "Can we talk when I get home?"
"Oh." The disappointment in her voice gave Lucky pause. He thought harder about what Renee was saying. The God thing maybe went a bit too far, but... Lucky suddenly realized what had upset his wife. This was the first time Mary Beth had ever lied to them, and his chest felt like crumpled paper. Lucky's connection to his daughter often surprised him. He hadn't expected to fall in love so completely as a father, to revel in her childhood. But that love came with foreboding, with the knowledge that eventually Mary Beth would pull away. She'd become someone he didn't recognize, and this early lie felt like a harbinger, his daughter trying on a disguise. Lucky turned away from James Allen, put the job out of his mind, nothing in his thoughts but family. "We can talk."
"It's fine," Renee assured him. "Good luck at the open house. Just know that you might need to stop by the shelter and get a puppy, you know, so we're not lying to God."
Lucky had told his wife he was showing an open house in Falls Church. In truth, he actually did have an open house, but an associate with the firm was covering for him. Lucky's day job was real estate, a field he'd worked in for nearly a decade, and the only job Renee knew he had. The Winters' crime syndicate had recruited Lucky before he'd met Renee, shortly after his dishonorable discharge from the military. The head of the syndicate, Victor Winters, had somehow been told about Lucky's proficiency at killing, as well as what the military had officially termed his distressingly reckless lack of remorse. The somewhat poetic phrase had confused Lucky. He'd never considered himself reckless. He accepted the work with the Winterses in exchange for their connections to clear his discharge and keep him out of military prison. But Lucky needed to be more than what the Winterses wanted, more than just that violent man he'd been in the military. He'd hunted for a day job, something to put on a resume, to give his life the vague sense of purpose that, at the time, he confused with fulfillment. Real estate resonated. Some of his realtor colleagues talked about the happiness of helping people find homes, but Lucky had never cared about the joy of strangers. And money wasn't important. The Winterses compensated him well for his work, although he kept that money carefully hidden. No, for Lucky, the romance of real estate wasn't in the work or money. It was the empty homes, remodeled for resale, walking past unblemished walls and on springy shampooed carpets or shining hardwood floors. There was romance in that waiting silence. He forced his thoughts back to the present, saw that the customer had moved on, and James Allen was now by himself, opening a box holding some sort of Christmas village display. Lucky walked to the stall, picked up a miniature pet boutique, peered through the window at a figurine of a tiny man in an apron washing a sheepdog.
"Can I help you?"
James asked. "My father had a bunch of these little Christmas houses," Lucky lied as he set the boutique down.
I found them in his attic when he passed away last year. Can't imagine they're worth anything, but I thought I should check. I'm sorry about your father, James said. Lucky noted the obligated sadness and the interest. The way James's eyes sharpened from casual to calculated. He loved that collection, Lucky went on. Said it was priceless. And you don't want to keep it? James asked. Since it was important to your childhood? Lucky froze at the word childhood, suddenly reminded of Mary Beth and her lie. It was a bruising moment. I want to sell it, Lucky said. You know where I can find a good dealer? Well, me. And James laughed. Lucky pretended to be surprised and pleased, even as he casually glanced around, trying to find a good place to hide James's body. You buy these? Lucky asked. Not just sell them? I do both. You got photos? I actually brought a couple of houses with me, Lucky lied. But I didn't think they'd let me bring them in. They're in my car. He pretended to have a sudden idea, eyes and mouth wide. It's not parked far away if you want to see them. James's body tensed. Lucky wondered if he'd pushed too far, too quickly. Tipped his hand. He didn't know why the Winterses wanted this man dead, but he was never told that kind of information. But Lucky felt safe to assume that if James was in a space this public, he had no idea that he was being hunted. Well, I can't leave my stall, James said. Lucky nodded agreeably. Of course. Maybe I could come back tomorrow. Sure. James's tone was still reserved but less rigid. Could you bring a sample? They'll let you carry it in if you get a sticker at registration. I'll see you then. Lucky pulled out the burner as he walked off, sent a text. Today's out. Has to be tomorrow. The reply came immediately, almost as if it was being written while Lucky typed, like he was being watched. Why not today? Too crowded. Won't it be worse on a Saturday? I have a way to get around it. A pause before they responded. Looking forward to tomorrow. Thanks. Or else I'll get someone else to buy it. Lucky had little interest in returning tomorrow, making the traffic-heavy drive from Virginia to D.C. on a Saturday. Spending another day jostled by Santas or blinded by flashing lights on Christmas sweaters. Inhaling sprayed pine. But that last message from the Winterses meant he didn't have much of a choice. They didn't take failure lightly. And Lucky had too much to lose. Day 2. Lucky almost didn't make it to the convention center the next day. He spent the morning going from antique store to antique store, searching for an old Christmas village that he could pretend had belonged to his father. It took 4 stores before Lucky found a suitable relic, a toy shop that cost him $300. But the $10,000 the Winterses were paying him to kill James Allen more than covered the purchase. Lucky realized he'd forgotten his garrote, so he decided to return to his house before he went to D.C. He'd never used the tool before. A pair of wooden handles with sharp wire between them. The wire lined with bladed ridges designed to cut through the carotid artery when wrapped around a victim's neck. Quiet and quick. Lucky thought he'd left it in the garage and was pulling out boxes, conscious of the time as noon approached, when Renee opened the door leading into the house. She keeps lying, Renee said darkly. Mary Beth? Lucky asked, holding a box marked Emergency Supplies. I asked her about the dog thing this morning, Renee went on, and she told me she never said it, and she swore to God she hadn't, again. She did? Renee crossed her arms tightly over her chest, holding in her anger. She keeps swearing to God. Is that bad? They weren't a particularly religious family, aside from a pair of holidays when Renee insisted they go to church. Sometimes they did. She has no boundaries. She needs to understand there's a limit. Will you talk to your daughter? I have that open house today, Lucky said. Please. When Lucky went up to her room, Mary Beth was sitting on her bed, using crayons to carefully fill in a unicorn in a coloring book. Hey, Lucky sat on the edge of the bed.
Hi, Dad.
It had been a recent change from Daddy to Dad, and now Mary Beth only called him Daddy when she wanted to be cute, as if she saw the term as too young for her. She was only 7 and wanted to be older. Lucky noticed the way she stared at older girls or women, quietly observing them, then mimicking their behavior. The way they carried themselves, their casual gestures and poise. He cleared his throat.
So your mom's pretty upset about the lying.
I swear to God, I don't know what she's talking about.
Okay, see, I think that's the problem. You need to stop swearing to God so much.
Why?
You just shouldn't.
Why? Mary Beth was still looking down at her drawing. Lucky couldn't tell if his daughter was goading him in some way, like the way she used to ask him endless questions, almost as if she didn't care about the answers. She just liked hearing him talk.
Because it's one thing to lie to us, he said, but it's another to lie to God.
No, he thought, that's not right.
I mean, you shouldn't lie to anyone, he clarified.
You lie? It was as if the house had suddenly quieted.
I'm sorry?
Mary Beth still hadn't looked up from the drawing.
You lie to me and Mom all the time.
Lucky's nerves felt like a wet towel being wrung.
That's not true.
Like, we ask what you're going to get us for our birthdays, and you always say nothing. But then you do get us something.
That isn't really a lie, Lucky said slowly. That was more like something you tell someone you love because it will make them happy.
Mary Beth frowned at her unicorn, a dab of yellow crayon outside its horn.
That sounds like a lie.
Yeah, Lucky admitted. But here's the thing. Sometimes there are lies that are good to tell, but they aren't really lies.
Like when you watch a cartoon, like Frozen.
Mary Beth finally looked up at him.
What?
Lucky wasn't sure where he was going with this either.
So, you know, Frozen wasn't real, right?
It was just a story, like a lot of cartoons.
Well, that's what I was doing, telling a story.
A lie is meant to hurt someone. A story makes someone happy.
So, I was telling Miss Sanders a story about getting a dog?
I guess. He wasn't sure anymore. But when she asks if that's honest, you have to tell her the truth. Otherwise, it becomes a lie, especially when you swear to God.
I think I understand. It's okay to lie if it makes someone happy. Except God.
Lucky wasn't sure as he drove to the convention center if he'd implied that it was impossible to make God happy. But he felt like he'd left Mary Beth in a good place.
That was enough for now.
Day 2 of Christmas Wonderland was the busiest, given that it was Saturday and the weather was unseasonably warm for early December. The parks Lucy passed were crowded with people and dogs, and spandex-clad cyclists swerved by his car. Lucky was forced to park even further from the convention center than he had yesterday and carefully carry his village piece through throngs of tourists and Christmas enthusiasts. His burner buzzed as he waited on a corner behind a pair of elves.
Hey, Dee, are you going to make it today?
Lucky set the package by his feet, quickly responded. Almost there.
Can't wait to hear how it goes.
He shoved the burner back into his pocket, picked up his bag. Lucky sometimes wondered if he was living in a surreal fantasy, misinterpreting random messages as full of hidden meaning, acting out violent missions that had come as a result of truly wrong numbers. He imagined himself someday arrested and forced to confess his crimes, a policeman or judge staring incredulously as Lucky explained what he'd done and why. Depicted in the media as a delusional disciple searching for meanings from an unseen God, doing whatever murderous tasks he believed were desired. Lucky never let that thought linger.
He didn't waste time when he arrived at the convention center. Just went immediately to James's booth and set his bag on the table.
You came back? James asked.
I did. Lucky pulled out the box with the toy shop. What do you think?
James took a small step back and said one simple word.
Wow!
Is it good?
Lucky was surprised by the reaction. He hadn't given the toy shop more than a quick glance before he'd bought it.
The packaging's perfect. James's voice was hushed as he turned the box over in his hands.
I almost don't want to open it.
But he did, gently using his thumbs to push out the styrofoam container, delicately separating the two halves to reveal the insides. He pulled out the little building marked Toy Store, closely examined the steps leading to a fake window showing a teddy bear, a carousel of warmly dressed customers peering into the storefront. The store was topped with another carousel, this one a merry-go-round of various animals, a stoic gray elephant, a grinning monkey holding cymbals, a lumbering polar bear.
I've never seen this model in person, James breathed.
He set the toy store down as if he'd worried he'd drop it and knelt to examine it closely. There was something childish in his attentiveness, the way the tip of James's tongue stuck between his teeth.
Lucky wondered what this harmless little man could have done to warrant the Winters' wrath.
James' excitement had distracted Lucky, to the point he hadn't realized the floor traffic had lessened, this corner of the convention hall now nearly deserted. He heard laughter from another area, hard-to-hear voices emerging from a muffled speaker system. Some sort of scheduled entertainment that had drawn everyone to the opposite end of the building.
Now was the time for a quick knife to the neck, to wrap James's body in wrapping paper, to slide him under the table, hidden by the red decorative tablecloth.
I like your toy store, a woman said. She was standing in front of the booth. James glanced up at her.
Thank you.
James looked around, saw Lucky behind him. Lucky had already drawn the knife from his ankle sheath, but, upon seeing the woman approach, he'd slipped it into his jacket pocket, his hand covering the handle.
I just love Christmas villages, the woman declared.
Watch this. James plugged in a cord connected to the toy store. It took a moment, but the carousels on the top and bottom slowly turned in opposite directions. The bottom one of parents and children peering and pointing into the store window. The top one with the empty merry-go-round. Lights glowed. And there was music. A scratchy recording of a woman singing Angels We Have Heard on High.
Cute.
The woman walked off. Lucky took a knee next to James.
Not many of them have music, James said. This one's special.
Lucky tried to respond but couldn't. He was transfixed by the toy store as the carousel slowly spun. The yellow lights, the faded song.
What was it, he distantly wondered, that was affecting him?
The song had no special significance to his life, and he'd never seen any toy store similar to this one. But something drew him to the display, the painted smiles on people as they traveled in a small circle, the delight drawn on a child's face, the way a little girl held her pink-gloved hands together as she stood in front of her father, a mother holding her bundled baby, the baby's head tucked into her neck. Lucky remembered late nights with Mary Beth, the way she'd fall asleep in his arms, her slight breath. This moment of wonderment and hope captured. The pure excitement of children, and how parents felt that excitement. Peace, and nothing else. Lucky stood, shakily, looked at the other buildings in the stall, how they formed a village caught in a single moment, snowmen built and sleds pulled, a boy's arm cocked to throw a snowball. His heart pounded like a prisoner shaking the bars of a cage.
You sure you want to do this?
James asked. Lucky hadn't realized the other man was watching him. Soft knowledge on James's face,
like light from a candle, as if he knew something about Lucky that Lucky didn't know himself.
"I'm sorry."
"Are you sure you want to do this?" James repeated. "You look like you want to keep it."
People were returning now. Whatever entertainment had happened on the other side of the hall was over.
"I have to," Lucky said.
Day 3.
"Did you buy it yet?"
Lucky stared at the message on his personal phone. Contacting him at this number, rather than the burner, spoke to the Winters' urgency.
"Not yet."
For once, traffic had been light heading into the city, the streets less crowded on a Sunday morning. Lucky had been parked outside the convention center for 2 hours, waiting for Christmas Wonderland to allow exhibitors inside to set up their stalls, sipping coffee to stave off exhaustion. He'd been unable to sleep the night before, and so he'd left Renee and gone downstairs and brought the toy shop to life. Watched the carousel spin as hours passed. "We'll go with someone else," the Winterses replied. He hurriedly typed back, "I'm on my way now." Lucky paused, then wrote, "Can I have more information about your interest?" 3 dots as a response was written. The dots disappeared. Sometimes, in the course of planning an assassination, or out of curiosity, Lucky did his own research. And he'd learn about the misdeeds these men had done, how they were going to trial to confess some crime they'd committed on behalf of the Winterses. Or Lucky would come across a past criminal record, discover the man to be a competitor. Or someone who had tried to leave. Sometimes he came across their families, images of wives or children. Once even a man who had been approximately Lucky's own age had a wife and a daughter who seemed to be the same ages as Renee and Mary Beth. But the part of Lucky that should feel remorse about what he did had been silenced. He'd read about psychopaths, famous killers who had been examined and found to be emotionally isolated, men with no sense of societal values. The authors had highlighted how these men mimicked emotions like love and sadness, analyzed behavior so they could imitate it. But Lucky had never felt that way with his wife and daughter. Or, sometimes, he wondered if he did, if some distant part of him was so desperate to be regular that even he couldn't distinguish his truth. His love, something he hadn't realized, was entirely a learned response. The Winterses didn't reply to his text, which meant they had no interest in answering his question. That opened the possibility that they would send someone else to complete this job. And, if that happened, they might decide his services were no longer necessary. Lucky didn't want to think about that possibility. 5 minutes later, James smiled as Lucky approached, paused while polishing a small figurine of a snowman reaching for a child.
"You're here early."
2 men were pulling wreaths from a cart. Otherwise, the aisle was empty.
"What did you do?"
Lucky kept his voice low.
What do you mean?
"With the Winterses." Fear, like it had been smacked onto James's face. Lucky stared into the emotion in his widening eyes. The rise of realization, the sudden knowledge of who Lucky really was.
"You're just some Christmas salesman," Lucky pressed. "Why do they want you dead?"
James quickly glanced around, the urge to call for help, but the 2 men with the cart had walked off and left it behind. There was no one left.
"You have a choice," Lucky told him. "You can talk, or you can die."
A whispered, "What?"
"James, I can kill you faster than you can move. And then I'll stick your body in that cart, cover it with a tablecloth, and wheel you out of here. Take you in my car and dump your corpse where it will never be found."
James looked at the cart, then back at Lucky. Lucky showed him the knife underneath his coat.
"I've done it before." I met someone, James began, raspy. He tried to swallow and failed, his throat too dry to do anything but speak and breathe, and barely only those.
A woman?
James shook his head too quickly, as if it was loose on his neck. Not like that, he said. My brother, I mean... He was crying, panic tears, breathing hard. Lucky watched him. Bob was this... Everything he did was great. He was a lawyer and then he quit law and invented some app and sold it for millions. And he never shared a dime with his family.
You mean with you?
I mean with any of us. James's voice was growing stronger as he spoke, as if he could convince Lucky of his grievance. Our parents, our grandparents. Bob hit it big and just left us behind. James paused like he was waiting for Lucky to chime in, to offer commiseration. Lucky stayed quiet. I was never doing that good, you know, James went on. I had this restaurant, but it went under. It specialized in battering.
What?
Like beer-battered fish, chicken, steak, waffles. It was called Battered. James, that name sounds like a documentary about abuse. Yeah, I know that now. My parents had given me the money, and when Battered closed, it pretty much broke them. We just didn't have anything, and I was drinking more. And I met this guy at a bar, told him everything.
I see.
James licked dry lips. He said he could help. You thought there would be money for you in Bob's will, Lucky guessed. How could there not? James asked, incredulous. He had so much. But everything went to his wife after that guy I hired. He left the sentence unfinished. All my parents got were scraps. I got nothing. Lucky let him keep talking. I wanted to contest it, but I talked to this lawyer and he said I didn't have a case. He told me to make a personal appeal to Bob's widow, see if she'd help me. So I did. It turns out she really loves these Christmas villages, and she'd bought into this franchise. When I went to her and asked for help, she signed me up to sell them, paid the cost to buy me in. But I still had this debt to the Winterers, and these little houses aren't selling enough to pay it off.
It's Winters's.
Oh. James was rubbing his hands together so nervously, Lucky could hear the skin sliding back and forth, like two sticks failing to start a fire. I've never told anyone this, but saying it now. I don't see what choice I had. I don't understand what I did wrong. He was your family, James. Not after what he did. Not after he betrayed us. Lucky said nothing. You'll tell them for me, right? James pleaded. You'll explain all this. You'll tell them why I can't pay. I mean, I can pay a little now, just not everything. You'll tell them? Lucky looked down at the table, at a snow-covered merry-go-round with children clutching lions. He opened his coat. I'm sorry, Lucky said. Later that night, Lucky, Renee, and Mary Beth stood in front of their kitchen table, staring at the toy store.
It's okay, Mary Beth said. How much did that cost? Renee asked.
Lucky stared at his wife and daughter. Honestly surprised.
Why aren't you two more impressed?
At your dollhouse? Renee asked. It's not a dollhouse, Lucky told her sternly. It's the Lemax Christmas Toy Store number 5071. His wife and daughter stared at him.
With music!
He plugged in the toy shop, turned it on. The lights flickered. The carousel softly whirred. Angels We Have Heard on High began to play. None of these models had music, he explained. This one's special.
The paint's chipped here.
Renee pointed to a tiny red mark on the side. Lucky wiped the blood away with a paper towel.
They must have touched it up before I bought it.
Can I have it? Mary Beth asked. I want to put it in my room.
In your... No! Lucky was aghast. What if you break it?
I won't.
Mary Beth reached to one of the carousels. Lucky's hand was a snake. Mary Beth shrieked as his hand wrapped around her wrist. Renee started. The quick motion had been enough to startle his 7-year-old daughter to tears. He could see Mary Beth's mouth trembling, her eyes wide and wet. Lucky let go of her arm.
I just wanted to touch it, Mary Beth said. Her tears started.
Jesus, Lucky.
Renee scooped up Mary Beth, let their daughter cry into her shoulder.
What the hell's wrong with you?
Renee's expression was whips of anger. Lucky hated that look. It always depressed him, made him feel like she'd never forgive him.
I'm sorry, Lucky said lamely. I wanted you to like it.
I'm sorry, Daddy, Mary Beth cried. I'm really sorry.
I didn't mean to do that, Lucky called after them as Renee carried Mary Beth away. The girl in that childish state where her tears spurred more tears, the way children helplessly fall. Lucky heard his daughter crying in the bedroom upstairs, Renee softly consoling her. He worried he'd hurt Mary Beth, that the way he'd grabbed her had left a mark. And the music seemed to swell as Lucky's remorse grew, as he felt the urge to rush upstairs, fall to bent knees, beg forgiveness, to apologize for ending that lovely moment when his daughter had lost herself in those spinning carousels. To swear to God he'd never wanted to hurt her.
The End. Thank you for listening to A Winter Killing. You can read more about realtor/assassin Lucky Wilson and his obsession with all things Christmas by pre-ordering E.A. Amar's thriller, When She Left, to be published by Thomas & Mercer on February 6, 2024. And learn more about E.A. Amar and his writing at eamar.com. To learn more about Sarah Jones and find a list of her upcoming performing dates, visit sarahjones.com.